I did two seasons on a ski resort. I lived in Copper Mountain, Colorado, and snowboarded every day for two seasons. And from there, I ended up living on a sailboat down in the Keys.
Hello, I'm Jeremy Powell. And here on the Peach Jam podcast, I get to introduce you to incredible Georgia musicians. From hometown favorites that you already love to brand new voices you're about to discover. It's my job to find different types of people and different types of sounds from all over the Peach State. This podcast is a mix of performances and down-to-earth conversations, all recorded live in the GPB studios in Midtown Atlanta. On this episode, you're going to meet an incredible storyteller.
We're going to roll right into this?
My name is Reverend Hilton. I'm from Marietta, Georgia, and I play Americana folk singer-songwriter. I just keep listing the genres, but mostly singer-songwriter.
It's you and a guitar writing songs, and then you play them with a band sometimes?
Sometimes, yeah. Yeah, so I have a couple folks that, if I'm doing a bigger show, a bass guitar, like stand-up bass, fiddle player, sometimes accordion, sometimes mandolin, but most of the time it's going to be just me, acoustic guitar, telling stories and singing songs.
All right, this song's called A Night Under the Stars. It's actually the title track of my newest album, and this song started, it came out a couple of years, I wrote it a couple of years back, and it was a song about like seasonal depression, like coming out of seasonal depression. But last summer, I spent some time down in the bottom of the Grand Canyon. I did like a 16-day rafting trip through the Grand Canyon, and it took on a whole new meaning when we ended up in the Slot Canyon. And there's this book that pretty much describes every single like inch of the Colorado, every single curb, every single rapid. And when we got up to the Slot Canyon, it said in there, the specific Slot Canyon, that if there's anybody in your group that's musically inclined, they should probably like walk up in here and play guitar. And I was on the river with 16 people that I didn't really know. And I grabbed my guitar and we walked through this canyon. And halfway up there is like this motor rig with like these like people playing like Red Hot Chili Peppers. And we were like, we're not stopping here. We're gonna just like keep on going. And we went all the way to the back of this canyon. And this is the song that I wanted to play up there for all these people and for this moment in time. And it was one of those moments where like everything just kind of stopped, and the room, it was just like this dead canyon. So there was no like reverberation or anything like that, but it just felt like everything was just like coming out and then coming back into us. And the energy was just one of those like magical musical moments that, I don't know, could probably only happen in the bottom of the Grand Canyon, but yeah, so this song's called Night Under the Stars.
Having trouble tonight, keeping it between the lines. Getting lost inside my mind. I'm stuck here in this ditch, going nowhere pretty damn quick. What's the opposite of homesick? And I quit chasing dreams, being down is all I seem to be. I need that spark to help me see. When the time's getting me, she's got her claws real deep. I need that spring to set me free. So give me a night underneath the stars, away from the light and the sound of the cars. Give me a fire, good conversations.
So I started in, I don't know, probably like 2013 or 14, when I really got back into focusing as a songwriter. I started playing these solo shows, and I don't know, I think that like I just kind of created like these intros to these songs. And sometimes it was to maybe to kill time or maybe just to like have that interaction with the crowd, like, you know, these intimate settings, you know, playing places like Eddie's Attic or even Red Clay Theater, you know, like playing these places where it's a quiet room and it's an intimate setting. And I wanted to, like, you know, my performance and my thing is the connection with the crowd. That's super important with me. And I think a lot of it also had to do with when I started writing Stubborn Nail, that was like an album for me. I had gotten sober and I was writing these songs about sobriety. And so it was also a way for me to kind of, like, you know, tell my story and that part of it to anybody that, you know, maybe needed to hear those types of things. And then it just became a thing, you know, when I would write a new song, and especially when I was on the road for long periods of time, you know, I'd have a new song and then I would not only shop the song, but then I would start shopping these stories too on how to, like, make, you know, how does it work? How does it fit into this song and that sort of thing? So
staring out my window, trying to let it all go. All these things that keep me low. I'll just breathe real deep, feel it down in my feet, and try to put myself to sleep. And I just close my eyes, lay here and try to watch those memories float by. But I miss the open road, the only freedom that I've ever known. Oh, that feeling of leaving home. So give me a night underneath the light.
For most of my 20s, the longest I stayed in one place was like 10 months. It was always, I think, like, looking at that time period, the reason it was 10 months is because it took 10 months for me to blow up the place where I was at. You know, it was time to, like, after 10 months, it was time to go. But yeah, I mean, I did two seasons on a ski resort. I lived in Copper Mountain, Colorado, and snowboarded every day for two seasons. And from there, I ended up living on a sailboat down in the Keys. And then I lived in some beach towns. I mean, it was always just San Francisco. I mean, it was just, I don't know, like, I think at a young age, I had a very adventurous life that I was looking for. And when I was 18, I graduated high school. My grandmother sent me out to my uncle's. He had moved to Coeur d'Alene, Idaho. And I just remember he took me to Banff National Forest. And I did this hike that it was called the Seven Glacier Hike. And I kind of left him behind and I walked up this trail and I sat on this ledge. And I'm just surrounded by the Colorado Rockies. And it was just like the instant, you know, wanderlust. And I think I just continued to chase that. You know, having these, you know, these adventures and seeing the United States in a way that I wanted to, you know, and just continue going. So, and it, yeah. Early 30s, the state of Georgia asked me to stick around for a little while, mm-hmm. You know, and then after I was released in 2014, 15, I just got back out on the road. And didn't really look back until the pandemic. I spent a lot of long, you know, about 6 years, heavy, heavy touring. In the last 4 years before the pandemic, I was doing about 200 shows a year, nonstop, living in a van.
Telling my stories and not thinking twice. Where I'm going, where I've been. Give me a night underneath the light. Whichever way the wind it blows, well, that's where I wanna go. The weather is fast, if it is slow, whichever way the wind it blows. So give me a night underneath the stars. Away from the light and the sound of the cars. Give me a fire, good conversations are all I desire. Give me a night underneath the stars. Give me a night underneath the stars.
What's it like to live in a van?
Oh, that's great.
Yeah?
Yeah, yeah. It made sense to me. Like, when I started getting back on the road, I had like a 4Runner, and I would go out and I would do like these 2-month runs, and it would be like, you know, in 2 months I'd do 55 shows or something, and it would just be nonstop. You play a show, you get up, you go, and you were meeting all these great people and going to these really cool places, but you weren't really able to, I wasn't able to experience these cool places or really nurture these relationships and these communities that I would go into every night. So the idea of finding some way that I could just stay on the road, and that was before I'd really like discovered van life. And I was actually coming back from Montana. I was in Bozeman, and I had to like, I think I had like 2.5 days to get back for some rehearsal for I think a Willie Nelson night that I was doing at Smith's Old Bar. And we left at like the last minute in order to make it back in time. Mm-hmm. And on the way back, I was like, okay, how do I figure out how to stay on the road? And that's how, when I discovered van life. And, I think that was like the summer of 2016 or 17. I'm not really sure. But, and a couple months later I bought the van, and I took about 2 months to build it out. And, I'd spent enough time living in cars and traveling the country that I kind of knew what I wanted in order in building the van out. And it was a small space. It made sense. Like you have this thing where, you know, I got rid of everything and it was so minimalistic. And the idea of if you wanted to add something to your life, you had to consciously be like, I've got to get rid of something, mm-hmm. you know, in order to add it to the van. And, I loved it. It was, to live, you know, at the end of the night, people would be like, do you need a place to stay? And I was like, you got a flat place to park the van. And then, you know, my bedroom was everywhere I went and wrote so many songs in there and so many adventures. Yeah. It was a hell of a lifestyle.
Yeah. It seems scary and awesome and frightening, fun, all at the same time. I don't know if I could pull it off, you know?
Yeah, I don't know, like it did just make sense when it was time to do it. I think a kid I was at my bar, at the bar that I work at yesterday, and just asking me like advice, and you know, and I think like, the biggest thing that I always said was, you know, people would be like, man, you're so lucky to live this lifestyle or to have this lifestyle. And I was like, it's not really luck. I mean, like the only difference between you and me is that like, I just decided to do it and I'm doing it, you know, like, and I think that's with anything in life, you know, just take that leap. And it's extremely scary and it's frightening. But you know, taking a leap, I don't know, this is our only existence that we know of, you know, and you know, for me, taking those leaps, you know, at the end of the day, like I'm going to know that, you know, I lived a life that I wanted to live.
Screamed at the moon, the night I met you, mud on a boots, keep us from the carpeted room. We'll take them off, cause we ain't leaving anytime soon. The horses are raised up, cause we've got some loving to do, and we carry on beyond a path we never knew. And the sun out of bats, and our future in view. Louise, shine, something new.
for me, like what stands out the most of looking back on that is how life like slowed down, because you're like being in that moment and just driving every single day. You're with that moment. You're with, you know, and like, and being with that. And that was like those 4 years of actually living in the van. It seems like maybe the slowest 4 years of my life, but there was so much that happened in that, you know, driving through the Mojave Desert, you know, leaving Vegas and getting down to Joshua Tree and just being out in the middle of the desert, or, you know, even just like going through the Roosevelt Tunnel and coming out, you know, on the west side. And I mean, you know, I would play really hard. I would do like maybe 14 days shows, 14 days in a row. And then I would take a week off and I would go out to these amazing places like Gooseberry Mesa, just south of Mount Zion, and like taking the van into these BLM lands and just being out in the middle of nowhere, surrounded by nobody. And just, it was this really great balance of like, you know, this social aspect of like creating and nurturing these relationships in these communities all over the country. And then being able to get out into the middle of nowhere and be all by myself and being alone and seeing the stars and, you know, freezing in 7 degrees in the Segura Desert in the middle of the night. And I had this plant named Miles. I had like rode shotgun. Mm-hmm. It was like this little Pothos that like somebody had given me right before I left. And it rode for, had its own little like burlap sack for when it got cold. And it rode with a seat, like the seat belt, so that it wouldn't fly all over the place. Mm-hmm. But it ended up, there's this great little spot outside of, in the Gila National Forest outside of Silver City. And I would go down in there. I would end my West Texas, East New Mexico runs in Silver City. And then I would go down to the Gilas, and this hot spring spot that this woman and her partner had made with like 4 hot springs and only 12 campsites. And so you just go in January and hang out in these campsites and, you know, walk over to the hot springs and warm up. And, but yeah, it got really cold and Miles didn't survive. It's too bad. Yeah. He froze. Yeah.
Poor Miles.
I know.
Did you bury?
Yeah, I did. Yeah. So
that's not crazy at all. Right?
No, I don't think it's crazy.
Yeah, I don't think so either.
No.
Yeah. Of course not. I love the idea of the plant buckled in.
Dance away days. Held each other all night. Retail the tale. About how we want to live right, and when the day breaks, we'll ride off into the light, side by side, and feeling something so right, and we carry on, we on a path we never knew, and the sun out of bed. Future in view, and our silhouettes will shine something new.
Did you cry when Miles died?
No.
Okay.
No. No, I didn't cry.
So, and I ask that because you seem like you're very in touch with your emotions, and you're very in touch with your inner self. And you write passionately. Where does that come from?
It comes from having music as my therapy. You know, I think like in the early days, and I don't know, I'm not really sure why my music has always been so personal, but it's always like told the story of my life. And but it's also been, you know, in my 20s, it was like when I was going through some like horrible breakup or whatever, I knew that like I was finally over it when the song was done, you know. But yeah, I mean, it is my therapy. It's the way that I'm able to stay connected with what's going on. you know, and release and feel like, you know, I had a, done a lot of therapy as well. That's helped out as well. But, you know, I think for me, I realized that the worst place that I can be is stuck between my ears, mm-hmm. you know? So if I have the ability to get what's going on inside of here out, you know, then that's extremely helpful for me. And then also, you know, the songs, they're kind of like timestamps, you know, it's, you know, I can kind of tap into those things every time I perform them, and can be, you know, hard and emotional, but I think that I'm very fortunate to have that sort of thing.
Stars have shone bright since the moment you came, and I have felt warm those nights out on the plains, and I know that you are feeling the same, and we'll make a life worth putting in a frame, and we carry on beyond a path we never knew, and the sun had a back. Future in view, and our silhouettes shine something new. We carry on beyond a path we never knew, and the sun at our backs, and our future in view, and our silhouettes.
Hi, it's Terry Gross, host of Fresh Air. Hey, take a break from the 24-hour news cycle with us and listen to long-form interviews with your favorite authors, actors, filmmakers, comedians, and musicians, the people making the art that nourishes us and speaks to our times. So listen to the Fresh Air podcast from NPR and WHYY.
So before we sat down for the interview, you were telling a story about being on the river through the Grand Canyon. Mm. So tell me about what led you to do that.
So I have some good friends. They're definitely much closer friends now that I spent 16 days in the bottom of the Grand Canyon with them. But they started a two-step night at the Star Bar a couple years back, and they came to me, and she had won the lottery in order, because like it's all lottery to get to, you know, these trips down in the you know, a lot of trips, you know, pretty much a bunch of the national parks to do hikes and that sort of thing, and she had won the lottery, and it's a 16 person trip, and they came to me, or they called me and asked me if I wanted to be, somebody in their group was only able to do 4 days of the trip. Mm-hmm. And they came to me and asked me if I wanted to do the rest of the trip. And I had zero whitewater experience. I'd never been whitewater rafting. And I explained that to them, and they're like, well, you know, a lot of people do this without whitewater experience. And they kind of laid it on thick, told me, you know, that it can be dangerous. There's, you know, the Colorado River is a big river. It is dangerous. And I was like, well, just let me think about it in a couple of days. And my dad had just passed away, a few months prior to that. It's kind of in a place in life where I was a little lost, just trying to figure out what direction I wanted to go in. And I remember I was at the Sierra Farrell show, and I'm just sitting there, and I'm like thinking, should I do this? And then I look up and I see Craig and Allison up in the top balcony, and I was like, yeah, I'm gonna do it. So I ran up and found them, and I was like, let's go. And so then I had to, like, I did a couple trips down the Okoe just to have an experience, but on the Colorado, it's these massive 18-foot boats, they're oar rigs, which means that, you know, one person is running the oars and then everybody else kind of weight displacement. And you carry in all, you pack in all your food and you pack it all out, everything. And I actually hiked from the rim down to the bottom of the Grand Canyon and just waited for them to show up. And then the other guy hiked out and I spent 16, 17 days in the bottom of the Grand Canyon. Just
wow.
Incredible, incredible experience. Like one of the experiences that just like an expedition, you get down there and you pull your weight, you know, you're in a team, you got to cook your own food, you know, you cook for the team, you know, you cook for everybody. You got the groover, which is where you use the bathroom. You got to find, and those are, you know, when you're on groover duty, your job is to find the coolest place to use the bathroom.
Okay.
And so you literally like, you get off the boat. And
like
you,
the like, best view?
The best view. Yeah. I mean, and the best view that we had was like up on this hill and like surrounded by cactus and there's this waterfall and the Colorado River's right there. And you just, you know, wake up in the morning and go sit on, and there are army cans, like army ammo cans. You go sit on that and.
That sounds amazing.
It's incredible. It's incredible. And it's like, you know. And it was, you know, I mean, I just jumped right into it and it was, you know, zero communication with the outside world for, you know, 2.5 weeks. And,
wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
If anybody ever asks you to do a Colorado trip like that, you just say yes.
Boy, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't even like the idea of sleeping outside.
Yeah. And there's scorpions and rattlesnakes.
Yeah. I mean, you're not selling it. Yeah.
No. I mean, but yeah. We slept. It was super hot. We were in there down there in August, and we had to sleep on cots. And the scorpions are like phosphorescent, so you can like you have like a little black light, and you can run it across in the middle of the night, and you see them. They just glow in the dark like a black light poster, just like sticking out.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Which I wasn't a fan of. I didn't need to know where.
Yeah,
you
no,
were.
I don't either. Yeah,
I know they're out there. I don't need to know there's four of them next to my cot.
I don't need to know that there's four of them over there planning to get me.
This song's called Everything Is All Right. And this song actually came out of being in the bottom of the canyon. You know, you have like these adventures. This is like an expedition that kind of like helped change your life. And this song, my dad passed away unexpectedly February of last year. And in the bottom of the canyon, you know, like there's like all the like the whole time it was only a few months after you passed away that I decided to go and do this expedition. And the whole time you're down there, you're just kind of like, I was just like, I can't wait to like, because there's zero communication, you know, there's you unless I guess you have Starlink or something down there, but you're not talking to anybody except for the groups that you're with. And but I just kept on thinking about how I can't wait to get out of here, because through all my adventures, I've always, you know, would call my dad and tell him what's going on. You know, I've been living on this sailboat for the last 6 months. I'm, you know, traveling around the country. And it was very difficult to, like, have that realization that, you know, when I got out of the canyon, like, he wasn't going to be there for me to talk to. And he never made it to the Grand Canyon. It was one of his, like, his first, like, bucket list. When he was supposed to retire, but he didn't make it. But this is a song about realizing that, you know, he's with me, he's a part of me, you know, no matter where I am, if I'm in the bottom of the canyon or if I'm in a sound studio at GPB. And just, you know, realizing that it's all gonna be okay, everything's all right. So this song's called Everything Is All Right.
Golden hour sets in, beauty is immense. I know you're here, I can feel it in my chest. The hummingbirds that fly by seem to pause for rest. Golden hour sets in, I can feel it in my chest. time it can't hold you when you're ready to let go. The river will guide you when you're living in the flow. So listen for the whispers and she will let you know. So brilliant and bold. I hear you in the shadows and all the wisdom you told. I feel you in the water holding me tight. I know you're in the sunrise, the warmth of the moonlight. Time it can't hold you when you're ready to let go. The river will guide you when you're living in the flow. So listen for her whispers and she will let you know. I open my eyes of the night, awoken by moonbeams, oh, shining so bright. I feel your love, that blue light. I hear the river's whisper, oh, everything is all right. Everything is all right. Everything is all right, everything is all right. This thing is all right. This thing is all right, everything is all right. It's time it can't hold you when you're ready to let go. The river will guide you when you're living in the flow. So listen for the whispers and she will let you know. You know.
As we're recording this, it's July of 2025. So, but this will come out after your child is born. And then eventually he's going to get to see it. So what would you say to him?
Wow. Wow, that is a good question. Philosophy always followed the dream, whatever it is. It's baseball, if it's music. Always follow it. Yeah. And be nice to your mama. Yeah.
What about you? Should he be nice to you?
He should be nice to me too.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think that, like, I don't know, man, it's just, you know, I don't know. I think I've lived this life that we get one existence. So let's not waste it, you know? Make days. Make the best of them.
So. How many records do you have?
I think 4 or 5. I think the 5th one just came out.
Okay.
Yeah. Is that right?
What's the goal?
Well, I mean, I think now the goal's changed. You know, with having a kid, I think that... The goal is just to raise them to be a kind and compassionate human being. That is, like, you know, I mean, you know, you're catching me in a time where you know, life and reflection is a completely different place than it was last year or even 8 months ago.
Mm-hmm.
Musically, yeah, I mean, I'm just going to keep on creating, you know, I mean, you know, I'm not going to worry about the gatekeepers that, you know, might put me on some Spotify editorial or, you know, I'm creating because I have to. And that's the plan. Just keep creating.
Thanks for listening. If you want more, you can catch all 3 songs from Reverend Hilton, start to finish, on GPB's YouTube page. And don't forget to leave a quick rating and review. It honestly helps. If you like what we're doing here on Peach Jam, tell somebody. Tell your friends, tell your neighbors, call your mom, tell your friend's teacher, the Boy Scout troop, whoever you can find. Tell them about Peach Jam. And if this is your first time here, I invite you to go back and listen to some of the other episodes. You might just find that your next favorite band lives right down the road. On the next episode of Peach Jam, you're going to hear from an Atlanta artist whose childhood obsession still influences him today.
But I used to draw the Beatles and their different eras and phases, and I had a little like manila folder that was like Atticus's Beatle folder, and I would like put Beatle memorabilia that I found, like if there was a Guinness Book of World Records, I would tear out the Beatle page that had like, you know, most records sold or longest note held. Mm-hmm. I'd rip those out and put it in there. I'd put my drawings in there. And
Atticus Ronis is on the next episode of the Peach Jam Podcast. The Peach Jam Podcast is produced, edited, and hosted by me, Jeremy Powell. If you want to recommend an artist to be on the show, send me an email, peachjam@gpb.org. Sandy Malcolm is our executive producer. Mark Davenport is our associate producer. Recording, mixing, and mastering by David Spence and Victoria Evans Cash. Special thanks to the team at Sounds Good. Find us on Instagram at Peach Jam Podcast. And look for Peach Jam on TV wherever you watch Georgia Public Broadcasting. In the meantime, please support live local music and independent record stores in your area